to this Thursday edition of the Hagmann Report. We have guests with us, Steve Quayle and Aaron Brickman. We're going to get back to them in just a second. Don't forget to check HagmannReport.com and check out Peter Barry Chalka's latest article, Fake News and Now Fake Ratings from MSNBC. And just a quick side note, tomorrow from 12 to 1, Peter Chalka will be the guest on the Hagmann Daily Show. And that's 12 to 1 on Blog Talk Radio and 2 to 3 on Global Star. So make sure you don't miss that. Is cryptocurrency a digital prison? That's the title of tonight's show, as we're talking with Steve Quayle and Aaron Brickman about the cryptocurrency world and Bitcoin specifically, as we see this huge increase in the price of Bitcoin, and it continues to just stun the markets here. You know, we're talking $1,000 increases in a matter of hours. Before the break, though, we had a question that my dad asked Aaron, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Aaron, and let's just jump right back into this.
Great. All right, value. When let's go back to Bitcoin. Bitcoin, when it was originally created, it is maxed out, okay, at 21 million coins. That's it, okay? When they reach 21 million coins created through the mining, and we're already at like 20 million, there will never be any more made, unlike U.S. dollars and the rest of the fiat currency system, okay? Now, a lot of people have argued that that's highly deflationary versus inflationary. Be that as it may, and the Austrian school can deal with that one, but be that as it may, it solves one of the major issues of the last 20, 30, 40 years that the world is having to deal with, which is that fiat money always ends up at zero, okay? And the nations will always destroy their own currency and eventually hyperinflate their debt away. So one of the main appeals to Bitcoin is because there is a limited supply. All right. The other values that are giving value to it, okay, is that it is borderless. It is secure. It cannot be tampered with. It cannot be confiscated. Steve and I have talked about this. What did all the wealth of the Saudi princes matter at the end of the day? All the billions, all the power. It blows my mind that even these billionaires, they were still within the system. Okay? That money was, they didn't own it. And so now we go back to gold and silver. And of course, if you can't touch it, you don't own it. Okay. You do own Bitcoin because you do control it. You control it. Nobody else controls it. It's reached value because of consensus. The only reason that the dollar in the United States of America has value is because we still are living under an illusion that it's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Although that illusion is wearing thin. Back to gold and silver. So can silver standard? Okay. That's really what I think you're asking, Doug. I mean, at the end of the day, if all of us as gold and silver investors truly believe that that's the only legitimate form of money, can we return to that standard?
Well, even a more basic question is, who decided Bitcoin's value?
Can that value be taken away? You said about China.
That's the free market. Just assigned it 5 years ago. Nobody cared. This morning they assigned a value of $19,800. Again, this is, and I know that this is a fundamental, we're inverting the pyramid. I will grant you that. Value with currencies, value with money has always been based upon the sovereign ability to force it into a geographic area, to force it upon the people, to outlaw any other form than the approved form of money.
Okay? All right. Let me approach this differently. People got together and said, screw the petrodollar. We know fiat currencies are, going to go down the tube. So we're going to just create a different currency. currency. Note, I said currency, not money, but currency, method of exchange. And we're going to assign it an arbitrary value. Going to limit it to 21, whatever you said. Going to limit the number. But I'm not even sure what it's based on. But okay, but is that what happened? I mean, is that with cryptocurrency? Is that kind of the basis for cryptocurrencies?
Yes, but the value is in the network. The value, okay. The value is twofold.
Now I'm
the
getting
value
it.
Is agreed upon. It's what we all agree upon. Look, if nobody I'm wants to buy it tomorrow, it's basic supply and demand. It goes to zero. If we all agree that it has, look, the day that the rest of the world decides that the U.S. dollar is not backed by the full faith and credit, it goes to zero.
Right.
Okay, but unlike this current system, when you're within this digital cryptocurrency, the other value that it has, and look, it meets the 8 criteria of ideal money, okay, generally acceptable, portable, well, it's even more portable, indestructibility, durability, homogeneity, divisibility, malleability, recognizability of it, and the stability of value. Now, the stability of value is what's being attacked right now. That's only because, look, what I would say, and I want to get back to gold and silver and answer your question, is what I would say is the reason we're not having a stability of value in cryptocurrency right now is because you're actually watching the death of the dollar. The death of the dollar is not going to occur in some movie-like fashion where when it crashes, that's the end. That's not the death of it. That's the funeral rites being performed. We're literally watching the people around the world get out of their local fiat system and get into cryptocurrency. They want out of this entire debt-based model. And it's a debt-based model of control. Okay, what cryptocurrency is saying is we're limiting it, we're agreeing upon it, we're empowering the people, and no authority is going to seize it from us, outlaw it. They can outlaw it, but we'll get into that. That has a whole other issue. In fact, I would say this. I would argue this since I mentioned it. The day, if they ever even attempted the foolish notion of outlawing cryptocurrency, okay, and I don't think they will do that, but if they did, then know right then and there that that is the currency controls being put into place.
Got it. Okay. That makes perfect sense. Right.
Well, and I want to correct, Aaron, 1 30-second statement from me. The basis of America's original value of the dollar based on the gold in Fort Knox was there was a limited supply of gold, and you could only increase the currency supply, if you will, the amount of cash available if the gold on deposit obviously increased. With fractional reserve banking and the end of the gold standard, that enabled the petrodollar printing into infinity or ad infinitum without any borders. And Doug, this will maybe help you. Think of Bitcoin, this is how it dawned on me, as a limited pool of what everyone is accepting as value. So the price has to rise, and in order to facilitate that price, people will be willing to pay more and more for something that they other people around the world. Pastor Langford called me during a break, and he asked me to ask you this, Aaron. Okay, he says, and this is critical, okay? I'm sorry, I'm saying okay now. This is critical. How do you exchange a Bitcoin for goods? In other words, you know, people are asking me, and it's coming in on my email, obviously on my cell phone from David, how do you go about exchanging it for goods? Now, I know the answer, but I want you to explain it in a better way than I would.
All right, let's get back real quick. Let's get back to hopefully answering Doug's question about gold and silver. And thank you, Steve, for talking about Fort Knox. I would submit that we will never go back to a gold and silver standard for one simple reason. Okay, what they are doing throughout the world, what we are witnessing, and I believe it's at the scale of the Industrial Revolution. In fact, I think it's greater than the change that the Industrial Revolution ushered in. Okay, this is not dot-com boom. This is not the turn of the 20th century. This is at least proportional, and I would argue even greater than the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. What they have done in that Industrial Revolution, that entire Industrial Revolution that got really kick-started around 1776, you had the destruction of the monarchies and the ushering in of a republican form of government. You had the destruction of an economic system. What was that economic system? It was feudalism, okay, and it was mercantilism. And you ushered in Adam Smith in his book on capitalism, The Wealth of Nations. And you had an entire new economic system. We take this stuff for granted now. It was mind-blowing at the time. It was truly revolutionary, okay? And we took power, and we began to take it down from the hierarchical top of the pyramid, from the kings and from the elite, and we began to move it towards the people. And the Industrial Age ushered in that to a degree. And what we've seen with technology is that this has been a fight, especially since the Internet was launched. What the Internet initially did was it propelled the people, it gave them even more power. And what we've seen in the last 10 years is a extreme pushback by the corporations, the elite, and ultimately the government. And what I'm arguing tonight is that cryptocurrency is a massive push back to them. This is an ongoing fight to gold and silver. I made all that statement to say that what we are witnessing is the dismantling of trust in the entire world system. Trust in government. Trust in the monetary system, trust in the education system, trust in the media, trust in religion, trust, you name an institution that was venerated at coming out of World War II, and they have destroyed the trust. And so if the Chinese and the Russians disconnect from the U.S. dollar, and they claim that they're going to put us on a gold standard, and they wave a Russian ruble or a Chinese yuan, who's going to believe them? You going to believe the communists now that it's backed by gold?
Good point.
You going to believe the Arabs? Who are you going to believe when every institution crumbles? I'm going to tell you who you're going to believe. You're going to believe no one. And that's the beauty of the cryptography system of the cryptocurrencies. It's yours. You hold it. There's consensus. It's limited. Nobody can take it from you. You can go through. Right now, I could have $1 billion in these accounts. I could walk through every metal detector on this planet. They could inspect every security device. I could leave this country, I could land in Beijing, Hong Kong, you pick a country. As long as I have internet access, I have my money. That is power. And the gold and silver, it won't get through the borders. Are you gonna park your gold in Singapore? You're gonna park it in Hong Kong with the Chinese pounding their chest and threatening Hong Kong? You're going to go put, where are you going to put it? You can't put it in Switzerland. They sold out. So,
I think I can maybe bring even a little more clarity to that. The problem is we're in a total change. May I just, Aaron, with your permission, I think if people understand the fourth turning, and I'm not going to go through all three of them, but I want to just read, a couple sentences, okay? And this is by Strauss and Howe. If you haven't read, this, you've got to read it, okay? You must, the four turnings. Here's the fourth turning. The fourth turning is a crisis. Old artists die. Prophets enter elderhood. Nomads enter midlife. Heroes enter their young adulthood, and a new generation of child artists is born. I want to come back to there. There is an era in which America's institutional life is torn down and rebuilt from the ground up, always in response to a perceived threat to the nation's very survival. Ladies and gentlemen, aren't we there right now? Civic authority revives culture, expression finds a community purpose, and people begin to locate themselves as members of a larger group. In every instance, four tourneys have eventually become new founding moments in America's history, refreshing and redefining the national identity. So basically, what they're claiming is with the stock market crash and the GI generation and now the millennial generation, I think people need to understand. They have kids that are probably 5 years old and 6 years old who have computational skills, abilities, and knowledge beyond their parents by any means. You know? And the thing that is really critical, ladies and gentlemen, we're aging, and these people are coming up in the ranks. 10-year-olds are coming up as genius-level people. So I think that's important that people understand that. Go ahead, Aaron.
What the internet did to communication, the blockchain is about to do to money. Okay? What did the internet do with communication? Prior to the internet, we had institutions. The New York Times, the Washington Post, the NBC Evening News. These venerated, and they were the authority, and of course, they were, and because they had these big offices and they had all these reporters in the field, of course, they were reporting truth. Okay? They got legitimacy because of where they sat on the hierarchy of the pyramid. The higher up, the more authority, the more truth we granted them. We believed them for what they were saying. You know, the internet comes along, and the internet doesn't care if you're the New York Times. The internet doesn't care if you're a blogger. The internet doesn't care. What they will decide by consensus, they will allow you individually to report, to decide, to take in information. If you're in a crowd on the streets of Egypt during a protest, your perspective is just as valid, probably more, in my opinion, than a New York Times reporter.
It's a great equalizer.
That was mind-blowing. Yeah, that was a revolution that was taking place within media. They're still reeling from that, and they're losing, and they're going to lose. Why? Because the technology, they can't take that technology back. They can't take it away from the people. And we're going to see the death of media. We're going to see the death of media institutions. We're watching the death of these media personalities in real time. And soon to follow will be their entire institution. Their entire ways of reporting are obsolete. What I'm proposing, which is so radical, it's so radical, we're about to see that with money, okay? We're going to find out that the sovereign, that you're sovereign when you can create money. Okay? I keep saying okay because it's just, you can, I see it, I can't explain it. They've got us believing and chasing a debt-based financial prison, and the people are deciding we don't want to participate in that. We can't get gold and silver. And here's the other thing that's going to give it value. We're in a digital age, and this is very important. How are we going to conduct business in a digital age with a traditional form of money? How is it going to be done? How are we going to exchange value when the products that are moving are not even physical anyways? And what do I mean by that? I mean, most of the books are now downloads. Most of the music is streaming. Most of your news service is online. Your broadcast, everything is going digital. And yet, the money's not. Okay, well, we can have their digital money. Well, that's just a prison. In fact, that's more of a prison. That's their dream. We all agree on that. So I would submit that the money is, if we weren't going to go into a digital age, maybe there would be some hope of gold and silver. How do you digitize gold and silver? You're going to have to trust that they don't sell that out from underneath you. That's the whole problem with even the idea that they would, that I would have Bitcoins backed by gold. So we park our gold with the Fed service and we trust that we're back at the same problem. Am I making
so,
a little sense?
A little bit. I'm still of the mindset where, if I had Bitcoin, I would run to Steve Quayle and exchange it for gold or silver, because what is Bitcoin backed by?
The money. I have an answer, Doug. Yeah. Hey, Aaron, let me help here. I think that the bottom, and this is my own opinion, I believe that the people that do make the huge money are going to do that because, look, the one thing that concerns me more than anything, and Aaron, I want you to address it, is the fact that these people believe, the elite believe, that a scorched earth policy killing off, and look, this is something that we've got to address tonight. I'm getting emails on it, and I know where Doug's going. But if the elite have their way, they will bring about World War III to bring upon the scene the Antichrist. Now, the question is, when does that happen? But if they lose control of everything, you know, unfortunately, when Rothschild made the statement, what, give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who writes its laws, they will not give up their power willingly. And have you considered, or those who I would call, you know, spherical geniuses like Cliff High, and he is one, and I consider you in that category, and that's not flattery, just you live in a different world. The point being, and that's a compliment, the complexity of this can boil down to this. You know, we're going to see at some point an interruption of everything. So I understand that, excuse me, if the one island, by the way, I'd like to know what that island is, and I'll meet you there, that's going to handle all transactions for Bitcoins. But right now we're in a total, if you will, desire with the powers that be to generate a world war. So at least at some point, in your opinion, if that takes place, this isn't a challenge, it's a question, then where does that leave the digital currency world? I guess my answer to that would be, and even answering Pastor Langford, you make the money in the digital market and you turn it immediately for commodities, because now the reverse of that is going on. People that would be investing in gold and silver for all the right reasons are being lured by the bait to go into, you know, digital currency. And I'm talking about the older generation, let's say 60 and up, because it's hard, even as Doug is not 60 yet, but it's hard for people to ascribe value to it. So we run through a typical transaction. Let's say, again, you did it already, but I don't think people heard it. You want to buy, let's say this, let's say because Bitcoin is 20 grand or close to it, I'll just say it's 20 grand. You want to buy $100,000 of gold today. Well, that 20 grand is going to buy, you know, or excuse me, 100,000 is going to buy 80 ounces, let's say, of gold. So would you basically, I would have to have a Bitcoin account to accept your offer, and then it's between you and I send it to wherever you direct me. Is that the basis of anybody who buys anything on Bitcoin or on the platform?
Oh boy, let's go with investing. If you have $100,000 in gold and silver and that's all you have, keep it. Do not get into Bitcoin. Let's just make this real simple. If you're looking at $500,000, you're looking at a million. Look, when gold and silver go, you know, go to true price discovery, you can afford to go park an X amount of percentage in cryptocurrency and take a shot at that, okay? Would I advise anybody to take a predominant position, a majority of their gold and silver holdings, and put it into cryptocurrency? No. Would I do both if you had the means? Yes, but gold and silver, and I agree with you gentlemen, gold and silver is the ultimate security. Okay, I believe that. I'm invested that way, but I'm saying it's for certain people that have certain assets, it is wise. This is a completely new asset class, is what I'm saying, and that is what's got people confused. You traditionally have five asset classes: stocks, bonds, real estate, fine art, or cash, rather, and precious metals. Okay? So that's the five classes. We're creating through consensus out of a digital revolution a new form of money. That's as revolutionary as Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, streaming, blogging were new forms of reporting. They didn't exist prior. The form of communication, nobody could imagine those forms of communication. Why would you need a million bloggers in the United States giving their political opinion? We have CBS. Why would you need cryptocurrency? We have fiat. Gold and silver let me address, I think we've covered gold and silver. You have to be smart about this. You can't do not. They will not let gold and silver, when the entire system, gold and silver will never even begin price discovery until the entire system is coming apart, and it seems. It'll probably reach price discovery about 2 days before that happens. When you see $100 silver in, 10, 15,000 gold, it's over. It's not beginning. It's over. And at that point, don't sell, because the sky's the limit. Who knows what the true value of it is? But until that day, I do agree with Steve. I think a lot of the money is going into cryptocurrency, and they will come back in when this system is about to buckle. Let's go back to 1929 real quick, guys. We had a currency system, and it is commonly known historically that across the United States, there were over 200 forms of scripts in what substituted as money during the Great Depression. We're going to see that again. We're going to see across the planet all kinds of substitutes taking place for transactions. Does it have ultimate value? Historical value? I think a lot of this is a product of its age. It's a product of the times we live in. And in where I believe we're going in a digital age, cryptocurrency will have a place. Maybe it'll have the head at the table. I don't know. I do believe that gold and silver, look, I personally think that silver's going to $1,000 an ounce. I personally think that gold will be unobtainable. I don't even think people will be using that to trade or to barter. I think it'll be so valuable. In regard
does that answer your question, Doug?
Yeah, it does. And you addressed the procedural, and Aaron addressed the practical. Yes, it does.
In regards to how do I purchase something today with digital currency? I'm not going to spend a long time on this, but it does need to be covered in very few people understand this. Silicon Valley understands what I'm about to say. There are, you know, the top MBA programs go through this. Every rollout of a new idea and a new technology goes through what I'm about to explain. And it's called the technology adoption curve. Think of a bell curve. Within the bell curve, it has five distinct phases of adoption. Every new idea, every new concept, every new technology, anything that is new to humanity goes through this cycle. It doesn't skip a section. It has to go through this. Sociologists have studied this. The original book was called The Diffusion of Innovation. It was in the 1960s. After that, I've read probably 10 books written solely on the diffusion of innovation curve and what it looks like. And very simply, this is what it is. You have five distinct groups of people that will eventually adopt any new technology, any new idea. This is not a personality trait. Okay? So what do I mean by that? Some technologies you might be in the first group willing to adopt. Other technologies you might be in the very last group to adopt. It just depends on the nature of the idea and the innovation. What are those five groups? The five groups are the innovators are phase one. The visionary are phase two. The pragmatists are three. The conservatives are four. The skeptics are five. The first phase, the techies, only 1.5% of the entire population at the time of that new idea is introduced. Only 1.5% will be in the first wave of adoption. Why did they adopt it? They adopt it because of the novelty, the newness, the revolutionary aspect of it. Think the iPhone in 2007. That's only 1.5% of the population. It then has to move to the pragmatists. The pragmatists are 13.5% of the population, or not the pragmatists, the visionaries. They're 13.5%. They're not interested in the novelty of the item or the techiness of it, but they do see the application specific to their circumstances, and they begin to come into it. They want a competitive, in business, they would want a competitive advantage over their competitors. The third phase are the pragmatists. They like to stick with the herd, and they move with the herd. They don't want anything beta tested on them. They want to know that it is now the new standard, and then they'll come in. That is 34% of the population. After them are the conservatives. They want it tried, tested, bugs out of it, and they'll be slow to adopt it, late to adopt it. They're another 33%. And the final 33% of the skeptics, and they'll come in years, if not decades later, and they'll usually come in complaining about it. Okay, think your grandma, you know, when she had to figure out email. Okay? So why is that important? That's important because every new technology that's introduced that they have studied has taken at least 20 to 25 years to go through that entire curve. It's a generational change. So where are we at in Bitcoin? We are just about to go into phase two. How do we know that? Look at the percentages of the global population that are involved in cryptocurrency. Best estimate is maybe 1%, 1.5%. It's the techies. It's the true people that were into it for the rebellion of it, the novelty of it. Maybe they saw the true application. They got into it over the last, basically, we've been into this nine years, almost 10 years. We're about to go into phase two. Phase two is 13.5%. Think about this. We got a price of $19,000 in Bitcoin, and we've had 1.5% of the world play with it. What happens when 13.5% of the world, and I would submit it's going to take about 2 years, come into Bitcoin? They're going to leave the fiat system. Part of cryptocurrency's value, and I'm talking about nominal value, it's kind of like it's like art right now at auctions. It has these insane valuations because we're dealing in, we're leaving a fiat system. We're trading in our fiat currency for something that we perceive as more value. Rightly or wrongly, we perceive it as more value. We're willing, and there's plenty of dollars floating around. There's plenty of fiat currency. They're going to spend it. We're going to see 100,000, minimum 100,000 on Bitcoin next year. It's simple math. Most of the people that have even come into Bitcoin so far didn't have a lot of money. There's a handful of them that were millionaires, maybe one or two billionaires, but for the most part, they were the young, they were the youth, they were the young, they were the 20-somethings, and they don't have any money. We're now going to see the investor class. This is why Wall Street is leading this. Wall Street's not leading this. Wall Street is a sign that phase two is about to begin. And the businessmen, the money guys, the corporations are seeing value, and they're about to place that fiat money into this system. The next phase after that, that'll take 2 years. In the 2020s, we will see the main street. We will see the average person come into it. I would submit that they will probably come in as the entire financial system is completely burning, completely coming undone. And it will, they will come in not, it's not that they're going to be excited to come in. They'll come in because the house is burning down. The gold and silver, they can't obtain anymore. And they have got to get out of the current fiat system. I'm trying to give you guys an understanding of how the numbers, big picture, work as far as adoption rates and what that looks like with the dollar price of the cryptocurrencies. I want to kick this back to you guys for questions and challenges.
All right. I think you've given us the historical context of the process of acceptance of all new things. Steve, go ahead.
Well, here's the deal. I didn't understand. I guess I'm in the fourth turning, the old guys that are getting ready, but I want to be the dinosaur that knows that the comet's coming and I'm off planet, okay? I'm just serious. What I mean by that is even old dogs can learn new tricks. And what Aaron has been able to do for me, and he's about 11 years younger than me, or longer than that, I'm sorry, you're 16 years younger, is to get me to realize that there is a quantum, there is a fourth turning. That's really a critical thing, Doug, to understand. Old systems are dying. They're giving way to the new. If you look at the Silicon Valley billionaires, look at their average ages. They think different. They've been hardwired different. They live in a world that most of us, even though we can, I'm a guy that can move a mouse and click send, okay? That's about it. The point being, but there are kids that are 14, 15 years old that are absolutely, when I say this, they're beyond rocket scientists. They're, I would say, practically applied futurists determining their fate. I got a call. Let me share this. This is interesting, Aaron. I think this will underscore. One of my friends, you know, who I'll tell you, I won't give her name away. She's a very active businesswoman. And she called me the other day and she said, Steve, I turned $3,000 into $500,000, and I didn't know she was in cryptocurrency or anything. She said, I want to come up and teach you how to do it. And, you know, if not, you're going to love this. So I'll send my 24-year-old son, and he just made $250,000, okay? Now, this isn't like Shoeshine Boys giving stock tips, but what's, I think the problem is, Aaron, people are not recognizing that the old system is dying, the equivalent of the Vandals, the Ostrogoths, the Visigoths that literally took Rome down are coming in the way of, let's just call it, on the electron highway, and that value is what people attribute to the commodity that they're exchanging. And in order to satisfy, like, David Langford and others' questions, there are people all over the world now that are saying, we want to be paid in Bitcoin, as opposed to, dollars, rubles, yen, whatever. So the question is that, how then, and this is a question, let's say, how do people buy it? And by the way, Aaron's not a broker, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not a broker. We're not pitching anything. We're not selling anything. But even the 20 grand or the 19.8 print, whatever Bitcoin's high was today, it shut down one of the biggest places that sells it. And that, what is that, Coinbase?
Coinbase is adding 100,000 accounts per day, and has now surpassed Charles Schwab in total account size.
Do they have the capacity to handle that kind of volume? Because I think the other day you said you had a hard time getting on and in any type of real time. So if we're seeing this at 100,000 a day, new subscribers, this is critical, Aaron, and we're at the 1.5% phase going into, next phase, the visionary phase. I think tonight what you're sharing is the visionary phase, obviously. And so how do people functionally get into it? Those who can afford to. Now, I want to make a statement clear. I think everybody, and you made it even clearer, should not sell their gold and silver. This is for people that have stocks, bonds, mutual funds, etc., that need to adapt to a different value system, because at the end of the day, you know, you can have $1 billion in your Bitcoin account, but the point is that you're not saying in place of, you're saying in addition to. And I think that's what everybody's got to understand tonight. If you recognize the change in the entire global economic thing, and I think you nailed it, Aaron. Trust. The only reason I take a $100 bill is I trust I can turn it for something else, whether it's food, whether, you know, it's a hamburger. I'm not joking. You know, I don't know. I haven't been to New York in a decade, but I don't know what a hamburger at, let's say, a good hotel costs. Well, my guess is, Doug, I don't know, is 30 bucks a fair guess for hamburger and fries and whatever?
Not in my world, Steve, but maybe in theirs, yeah.
No, not in my world either, man. I mean, you know, I'm eating ketogenic, and I'm eating, you know, stuff that is mostly green and protein. So, but I'm just saying that I believe someone called me, and somebody wants to send me an email right now. Why this is valuable is because everything else is losing interest, and people who are smart enough to see where we're at and what Aaron just laid out for you, where we're at, and the going from the innovators into the, you know, forgive me, the visionaries to the pragmatists, you know, the thing is, things are changing, and it's tough for the old guard to yield to the new. But he's also saying, and tell me if this isn't a good summation, he's also saying that everything that you know in the financial realm and have known by commercial paper, it means everything that you've got a deed to, ownership, or supposedly an interest in, that's all going to change.
Oh, boy. So let's talk, yes, Steve, let's talk about value. Let's talk about value on the decentralized network as cryptocurrency and what it's doing to the financial system. Look, the financial system is freaking out. Wall Street's freaking out for a couple of reasons. And since we know that they are the bankers, that's where they all reside, let's talk about how cryptocurrency is a direct attack upon them. Is that you guys want to go there?
I defer to Steve on this.
Well, I think again, okay, let's go back and then we'll go there. Here's another question. somebody says, I know I'm slow, but how do we buy it? I mean, I don't think people understand. You write a check to somebody at the time you enter in. It's just like buying a stock or bond. And if one Bitcoin's 19,000, you write a check for 19,000. Who do you send the check to?
To purchase a Bitcoin.
Yes. I'm sorry. Thank you, Doug.
Coinbase is the number one account in the United States that would open up an account for you to purchase cryptocurrency, at least the three main cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin being the one we're discussing tonight. You would go to Coinbase.com. You would open up an account. It is extremely easy, much easier than opening up a bank account or any other financial account that we've all had to go through. So the process is very easy. You would either wire them money. That would be probably the easiest method of payment to them. And then inside their account, you can purchase Bitcoin. It's that simple. Now, it gets more complicated the more you want to secure those assets. We won't even go into that tonight.
You can buy fractions of a Bitcoin. In other words, you don't have to buy a Bitcoin. You can buy a tenth of a Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right.
Absolutely. It's whatever amount you would like. This is genius. One of the geniuses of this is it's just a decimal point. You can spend it. Now, going back to the technology innovation curve. They've been building the infrastructure of cryptocurrency for 9 years now. This is a natural progression in any industry. Think the internet. The internet, the first couple of years, and the internet goes all the way back into the early 90s, you know, with the modem dial-ups and the squawking noise and all that we remember. There was the techies who were participating in that in the early 90s, and it took years and a lot of money to build out that infrastructure. And then you saw waves of young people, and then moving on up the demographic ladder to come in. You had the dot-com bubble. It's been going on for 25 years. It took an entire generation to basically get the planet online and get them used to email and communication and everything that we take for granted now. So in 1994, you could get on the internet, but it was much harder and much more difficult than 1999 or 2017. Why am I saying this? But what I'm saying is that if the answer Pastor Langford's question, that it will take years to build, to transition this entire global economy into cryptocurrency. It has been 9 years. According to the bell curve and the model, it should take about 25 years. That takes us into the 2030s. There's going to be huge, just like the dot-com boom, there's going to be huge fortunes made. And I'm not talking just about personal investor fortunes. I'm talking about the entrepreneurs that participate and create these entire new systems. One thing I think that I want to make a point of stressing to the public tonight is that the Facebooks, the Googles, the Twitters, these companies that have achieved almost overnight $1 billion success based upon the internet revolution, most likely, historically, according to the textbook, will not survive this transition. Let that sink in. I could take you through 300 years of innovation. It is a fact. They teach this stuff at Harvard Business School, at MIT, at Stanford. It is what terrifies the elite, is historically, they have all the power. They have all the money. They are vertically integrated. They control the media, and yet time after time, they cannot catch the wave fast enough. They cannot understand the change that is upon them, and they are too big and too slow and too set in their ways to move at the pace that the young and the entrepreneurs are moving at, and time again, they are swept away, and a whole new class arises. This is very important, because what we're looking at is a potential for an entire new money class to enter into power that didn't have to be approved by the gatekeepers. They weren't vetted. They didn't join the club. They don't hold to the same ideals in global motion. They're revolutionary, and they didn't have to sell out to become billionaires. It's going to wreak havoc with the systems. Imagine the new class of billionaires that upend Facebook, upend Twitter, upend Google, that replace YouTube, and YouTube will be replaced. The entrepreneur class are already building alternative systems.
With the understanding, of course, and I have to interject this, every single platform you mentioned is connected to, in some way, shape, or form, the shadow government, permanent state, or deep state.
Correct. And let's address how they work. There's a centralized platform. What is a platform? A platform is where two sides, a producer and a consumer, come together. One creates content. See, these guys don't, they're platforms. They don't create content. This is the, and we won't have time to go through it, but this is the next evolution. This was the evolution out of the industrial age where you moved to platforms. Platforms created ecosystems. They created communities, and they allowed producers, they gave them some tools and fostered some innovation. Like YouTube, for example. YouTube doesn't produce any videos. They don't produce any content. They gave you the tools. You could produce the videos. You could participate in the community. You could gather your followers. And it was a great plan. And it's a beautiful plan, except for one thing. It gave too much power to the people. And all of a sudden, they didn't like that. So across the platform, Facebook's a platform. Apple, the App Store is a platform. YouTube's a platform. Twitter's a platform. All of a sudden, they had to intervene and control the content. The beauty of the blockchain, and this surpasses and it goes to my original statement, money is the first application of a decentralized network. What they're really about to do is they're going to reconstruct all that on a decentralized network, and there is no third party intervening. Whatever you want to push out as content, whatever you want to blog, whatever video you want to post, it goes right into your community and followers. And nobody, no third party, no gatekeeper, no government can intervene. This money, we're dealing with money right now on the blockchain. That's the first thing these guys went after. They're building literally right now in real time. They're building alternative Facebooks, alternative Twitters, alternative YouTubes. They're building stuff that I'm reading, it's blowing my mind. And I've been an entrepreneur for 2 decades. We broke the rules in our industry in the first time around. We're about to launch another company that's going to break the rules again and upend the order. And I'm being blown away by what these guys are building. Financial services. Let me show you what they're doing in financial services. Banks primarily get their money a couple of ways. They get it through fees. We already talked about how that's going to be eliminated. They're removed out of that equation. They get money through loans. There's now going to be, on the decentralized blockchain, companies that are making micro loans at 2, 3, 4%, not 30%, not late fees. Banks make money through taking corporations public, and this is what has really got them concerned. So if I want to go public, I have to go to Wall Street. I got to be vetted. It costs me millions of dollars in lawyers and bankers. And Goldman Sachs, it's rumored, it's reported that Goldman Sachs, when they take you public, these other companies are taking 40 to 50% prior to you going public. You sold your soul before you ever got a dime. What are the ICOs that you're hearing about? You're hearing about all these ICOs, ICO coins. If I have to go.
Aaron, define. Hey, Aaron, ICO, India, you know, Charlie Oscar, define that.
Initial coin. ICO is an initial coin offering. We used to have IPOs, initial public offering, stock issuance. Goldman Sachs was the bankers were taking their cut of the stock before it ever went public. What the ICOs are now is I'm a kid in the basement. I'm on the blockchain. I want to build a company. It doesn't matter whether I'm in India, Russia, the United States. I need to raise funds. So I put my company up on the web. I announced that in 3 weeks we'll have an ICO. And they're raising tens. Some of them are raising $100 million in less than 30 days. No bankers, no bank fees, no vetting of government. See, if Wall Street, if Doug and I want to come up with a radical business solution and we need funding, we have to go to the VCs of the banks, and it's counter-revolutionary, it's counter the state, there's no way we're getting financed. It ain't happening. This is where they just bypass everybody.
Aaron, we are up against our top of the hour break. Folks, we're talking with Steve Quayle and Aaron Brickman. The subject is cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin and others, how they work, how you purchase them, what creates their value. We'll be back with our third and final hour after the short network break. Don't go anywhere.